It's our mega injury episode with resident orthopedic physician assistant, Ruvain Guy. He'll take us through a quick overview of some of the medical terminology, and we'll go through all of the relevant fantasy baseball injuries, timetables, replacements, and strategy throughout. This is definitely the episode to get out a pen and paper and take some notes. Our major preseason injury report episode coming up next on Beat the Shift. And welcome to another episode of the Beat the Shift podcast. I am your host, Ariel Cohen, and with me as always is Ruvain Guy. How are you, Ruvain?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. We just had Tout Wars weekend. I was in the city for the weekend, and there was all the draft, the AL, the NL, the mixed, and I was in the head-to-head auction. Really, really fun draft. A little bit of a different format, but a format that a lot of people are playing today. Always great personalities there. How are you doing? How was your weekend?
It was good. I wish I could have been there, but I was actually watching my son play his first high school baseball game. Freshman making the baseball team. As a pitcher, I couldn't exactly miss it.
That's right. And if I'm not mistaken, my son also made his high school team and they're in the same league as you, as your kid, right?
Yes, there is a possibility that they'll play each other at one point, which at that point, I guess I'll see you in person.
So my son made the team as a pitcher, but he's probably going to actually be the starting either left fielder or right fielder because his bat is really good. And they do have other better pitchers. So he'll actually probably be an outfielder more likely than not. And he's a submarine lefty. Throws about 70 miles an hour. So that sounds exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting. And they just actually had the starter go two innings, and my son pitched against the heart of the order, juniors and seniors, and he actually held up pretty well against them. So I'm very proud of him.
Amazing. Yeah, well, sorry you missed Tout Wars. There was a nice reception at Dave & Buster's in Times Square and a lot of other great festivities as well. I am going to recap that draft and the labor draft. We're going to have a guest at the end of the week here, sort of go over a bunch of drafts this season in time for some of the next weekend's drafts for you. So stick around for that. But today, there is no guest, because it's Ruvain's time to shine here. This is our injury episode, and we're going to go over a number of injuries that you have asked us that you might be interested in that really matters for fantasy, and we'll give you some questions, some strategy along the way as to what to do about it. Good medical details from Ruvain, who, by the way, if you don't know already, Ruvain really is a real-life medical professional. Did you want to give a little bit of background about yourself?
Yes, in real life, yes. I've been doing orthopedics and pain management for, I guess, since 2005. So I guess I'm doing it for almost 19 years already, which seems crazy. And I've been treating athletes. I've been treating regular run-of-the-mill people. So I see all sorts of injuries. I see sports-related injuries. I see chronic injuries. I see everything. And I treat them. And we treat them with injections, treat them with therapy and all that stuff. So I have a basic idea of how to treat the players if I was hypothetically one of their, you know, physicians if I needed to be.
So I guess the audience may want to know, have you ever treated Major League Baseball players?
I have not. However, I did go on a seminar where actually an NBA player was there and he got an injection. I can't say who for HIPAA reasons, everything like that. But it was mid-teens, like 2011, 2012, and he was on a winning team. And I recognized the player. A lot of the people there who were in the course didn't recognize him, but I did recognize him. So yeah, you do see it. I've actually also came into contact with a former National League Most Valuable Player in my practice. So I do come across some, not really the active ones, more the non-active and retired ones.
Have you treated high school and college kids for Tommy John surgery?
Yes, I've evaluated them. I've gone over MRIs, looked at them. I've evaluated it, telling them whether or not they need it. And I'm very big against having these kids not do Tommy John. They're coming to me at ages 16, 17, wanting to do it. And the question is always, you should go do it 100% if you're going to have scouts and if you're going to be drafted and if you know that's going to happen. If that's not the case and your whole livelihood is not on your elbow, then you should really be concentrating on school and not really going after that.
All right, so Ruvane really is a real medical professional. He knows what he's talking about. He's not just reading the news here, guys. So, you know, before we go into actual players, maybe you want to give a little bit of background about, you know, maybe some basic anatomy terms or, you know, what's a ligament, what's a tendon, what's the difference between a sprain and a strain and that kind of thing.
Sure. I'm going to try to keep it easy because I'm going to speak to the audience as if I'm talking to my patients. So I'm not talking down to anybody. I'm going to try to give the best answers for these types of questions. First of all, ligament. A ligament is a fibrous connective tissue that attaches bone to bone, and it usually serves to hold structures together. Like you're talking like the UCL, which is for the elbow, or ACL, which holds the knee together. The knee also has a meniscus, which helps support the knee when moving. But when it tears, it gives the knee less stability. So that's something to watch for when you hear the term meniscus, ACL. So ligament, bone to bone, and that's probably usually the one that usually requires surgery for most of the time. Tendons. A tendon is a fibrous connective tissue that attaches muscle to bone. So you get this more in football players where they can have a problem with their shoulder, where they can have a tendon rip off a part of a bone, tendon that rips and it severs the muscle to the bone, and that usually requires surgery. Also, those two, a lot of times in the media, those two things get mixed up. There is a big difference because there's a big difference in the way they're treated. Now, when talking about a sprain and a strain, the difference between a sprain and a strain is that a sprain injures the bands of tissues that connect the two bones together. Think of a big rope on a ship. While a strain involves an injury to a muscle or to the band of tissues that attaches muscle to bone. So a strain, it's because those are the two main differences. And
which is
more of the better way.
Which is worse?
Yeah. I would have to say that they're about equal because it depends on where the injury is. Because people, you hear the term sprain of the elbow or strain of the elbow. When the teams are actually telling us what's going on, they're very vague. And sometimes the managers will use the wrong term, maybe on purpose, maybe not on purpose. And sometimes you won't get the best idea. If you hear tear, that means that's obviously torn. A fracture is the same thing as a break. So if you hear those two things, those are two words that people, you know, usually interchange. And usually a sprain takes a little bit longer than a strain to heal. That's the main difference, because a strain, usually you can just rest and get better. A sprain can lead to a tear.
Okay. What are the main bad injuries for pitchers? We're talking about elbow and shoulder. Is one worse than the other, and what else should we be worried about?
Shoulder's always worse. Shoulder's bad because that's the anchor of the rest of the arm. The elbow, more elbow injuries are seen now because pitchers are building up their muscles so much to the point where the elbow, which is a smaller joint, there's more stress on it. And you put more stress on a joint that's smaller, there's a better chance of there being an injury. But shoulder issue, when you hear shoulder surgery, usually that's the longest recovery time. It's hard to get full velocity back after a shoulder injury. If you hear the word like impingement in the shoulder, like we're going to mention about, I think Yuri Perez has something like that. Impingement in the shoulder is when a nerve is being blocked by the shoulder and it's rubbing against the bone and causes pain. It can cause numbness and tingling in the hand at times as well. But for pitchers, elbows usually the worst, but lower body injuries can affect also knee, ankle, foot. What foot are they landing on? What foot are they pushing off on? Are they able to continue their mechanics the same way? So I think when it comes to pitchers, usually elbow, people think the worst, and it's usually the longest recovery time. But when you hear shoulder, you don't hear them recovering for much longer time.
And the hitter injuries, obviously, you know, somebody breaks his wrist or whatever, that you know, that's a fluke injury. You can come back from it. From what I understand, the worst ones are the soft tissue, you know, a hamstring, and because that can be reoccurring. Like, well, what's your evaluation of that?
I'm going to say to answer that, yes, but the hand, the shoulder, and the elbow, and the fingers can all affect power. If there's an injury to any of those, whether there's a fracture, whether there's a tear, like if someone slides into a base, like Mike Trout a couple of years ago slid into a base, had a problem with his finger, had surgery, he was out for 2 months for a tiny little thing. But that's why the hands are amazing. There's so many bones, and there's so many tendons and ligaments in it that so many injuries can occur to that. The lower body affects the speed, and it's a little bit longer to heal, like you mentioned, a little bit longer to heal, because it's hard to determine when a sprain is completely healed. Yes, you can get an MRI, and you can see whether or not a strain or a sprain of the hamstring has completely healed, but if it's completely healed, it's also a matter of how the player feels, if they're able to push themselves, and how quickly they can push themselves.
All right, so anything else before we get into specific players?
The main thing is that when you hear how injuries are talked about in the media, taken a listen as to who is talking about and what the situation is. Do not listen to anything Aaron Boone says, for example. Managers are not good. Aaron Boone will say, oh, Aaron Judge is coming back on Saturday, and then all of a sudden he's not back and he's worse, and they're saying, hope a week later. Say, you can't trust managers. Managers don't know the medical aspect. Even the GMs, they're explained what the
injury
is.
Well, they don't know, or they don't want to say.
A little of both. It's sometimes ignorance is bliss. It's better not to know the full extent of things. Like last year with Aaron Judge and his toe, nobody knew what was going on. Aaron Boone was completely silent about it. He didn't say anything about it. And when he did, he was extremely vague about it. That he didn't say initially there was a tear. He didn't know how long he was going to be out, just for a week, just for 2 weeks. He ended up being out for a couple of months. So listen to who's talking. If it's the agent's talking, that's one thing. But if it's the manager talking or the GM, think about what their motive is to say what they're saying.
All right, before we go into individual players, we've got trivia. Injury Guru's Trivia of the Week.
So this trivia is pretty basic, and Ariel, let's see if you can get it. Now, there's a bit on The Price is Right called High or Low. So we're going to play that game today.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with a base number. We're going to say how many players were on the IL that year. So in 2018, there were 585 players on the IL. In 2019, were there higher or lower amount of players on the IL?
19? I'm going to say higher.
2019. The answer is lower. 574. It actually went down. 2020, I'm skipping because 2020 is just fluky COVID because of COVID and everything like that. So from 574 in 2019 to 2021, more injuries, higher or lower?
Higher, but there might be some COVID stuff too in that.
There is, but the significant amount of the injuries, it went from 574 to 852.
Whoa.
In 2021. So there was a big jump. What about from 2021 to 2022? From 852, higher or lower?
I'm going to say higher.
Answer is lower, 739. Now, COVID did play into it a little bit in that, but still, to have that much less, over 100 less, that's a big deal. What about from 2022 to last year, 739, higher or lower?
Yeah, I'm going to go higher on that one.
Answer is higher, 813. And there's already 29 players on the IL this year. So, as you can see, the injuries have been increasing and increasing, and usually it's about 50% of your fantasy team's roster that ends up on the IL at one point or another. Just hope it's not the important guys.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. So we'll do the best we can to help you manage what's going on currently as we're sitting here in middle of March. So let's go through a couple players and tell you the story to know how much of a risk discount you should draft them at, or you know who their substitutes and so on and so forth. Well, let's start with Byron Buxton's got to be injured by now, right?
Yes, I was going to say the first player we have to discuss is a player we've been talking about baseball the last few years, part of a playoff team, has his share of injuries, had a back flare-up, minor calf issue. He had knee surgery. People didn't know where to draft him exactly. I could be talking either about Ronald Acuna or Byron Buxton, because they both had the same type of things, except Acuna's recovery time is a lot quicker, and Buxton just can't seem to fight the injury bug. Acuna's still only 26, so he's still young, but Buxton is already getting up there in age, and you know, a couple years older makes a big difference. He already missed the last half a week with back spasms and back tightness. They want him to be the everyday center fielder. What do you think? Do you really think he's going to be the everyday center fielder for the Twins?
not for the whole year. I mean, we all dub him as an injury-prone player. Is that really fair? I mean, can we say that he just will maximum play, you know, two-thirds of a season is his absolute max, he's just going to be injured? Or is that, you know, he randomly just keeps getting injured? Is it safe to say that he is injury-prone and you can expect to miss a third of the season or more?
Yes, there are some players that do become injury-prone. Giancarlo Stanton comes to mind. Adalberto Mondesi, who's not even being talked about anymore because he was injured so often, he hasn't come back from the most recent knee surgery. There are just some players that just, it's not that their bodies don't hold up. Sometimes it's just bad luck, and that's all it is. And that could be with him. I mean, he tries to push it. He played a very reckless center field when he was younger, and he got a lot of injuries that way from, you know, diving and crashing into walls and stuff like that. So he is injury prone. There are pitchers who are injury prone. I mean, if you look at Jacob deGrom, you can say he's an injury prone guy, even though he was pretty steady for the first 7 or 8 years of his career. But now, as you get older, the injuries start to pile up.
Okay, and if he is going to miss some time, who would be guys to replace him? Are we talking about Willy Castro, Manny Margot getting more playing time?
Yeah, Manny Margot, he's probably the most valuable guy they got in that trade with the Dodgers. He's going to probably get more playing time because he can man center field a lot. Matt Wallner will see extended playing time. They may not platoon him as much as a lefty, so he may get more at-bats. You may even see, I don't think it's possible, but maybe Alex Kirilloff back in the outfield. I don't know. He hasn't played the outfield in a while, but that's a possibility also. But center field and DH is going to be a little bit open there only because of that fact. And the fact that they don't have Mitch Garver there anymore as a DH, so they can actually rotate all the outfielders in and out and keep them all fresh.
All right, next up, Ronald Acuna. Obviously, he's a very high-profile guy. He's the best player in fantasy baseball, especially Roto. He had a little bit of a scare a couple weeks ago. I was in Florida for that scare, and I drafted in the NL labor, and he went for just $40, and everyone was stunned. But nobody wanted to go any higher because they were like, oh, I'll pick that guy. But it looks like he will make opening day even. Not too bad an issue. Or is it? Let us know. And do you think that these knee issues that he has, is that going to affect him stealing 50-plus bases?
I think that Braves may want him to slow down just a little bit, but, I mean, he already returned. He's playing the field. He legged out a double earlier today and scored a run. His speed looks fine. His knee may flare up occasionally. That may happen. They may give him more days off this year than last year, but so far, you know, the Braves don't have any reservations with his injury, and the fact that Acuna went for 40 in that auction, that's a bargain. I mean, even if he plays 70% of his games or 80% of the games, he's still worth it. I don't see why he would go any lower than that.
Yeah, kicking myself that I didn't at least say 41 to get the price up a little bit more. But it wasn't just me. Everybody in the room was stunned. It was just, all right, we want him to go higher. We don't want to be the one to get him. So that was just information at that conference was, I don't know, you got to worry a little bit. And for such a high prize, that was the story. But draft with confidence. He's the number one player. Draft in the 40s, maybe even 50 in a mixed league in an auction. Aaron Judge, key guy to talk about. He has shown he has been able to keep it healthy in some seasons, but most of the time he is injured for an extended part. He is a big dude playing center field. We don't really get these very tall, six-foot type guys playing center field even. So he's a little bit of a fluke. Obviously, he has monster power. We know that he has AL history power in him. Are we to assume that he's just going to miss some 15, 30, 40 games a year?
Yes, and they'll call it as quote-unquote management. They want to manage him. Yankees were able to manage Stanton, and he went through last year pretty much pretty good. I mean, he did spend a little bit of time, but otherwise he was fine. The Yankees already know what they have with him. They're paying him a lot of money. He wants to be out there, and he'll do what he can. He already has hit off a tee. He hit soft toss pitching, but like I mentioned, Aaron Boone said that he would play this past weekend, and he didn't. So Judge is a little bit farther behind than he would want to be. Judge said that if Saturday was a regular season game, he would play. I don't know. I don't know if the Yankees would have wanted him to play so early in the season, especially when he comes back to New York and have colder weather and these injuries can manifest and be a little bit worse. They said he's supposed to come back later this week, start getting some at-bats again. We'll see how that works.
So ATC projections has him for just under 600 plate appearances. Now, ATC is one of the lower ones that I see around because it does consider some of the injury risk, but is that 600? Is that too high, you think? I mean, other projection systems have 650, maybe even more. Is 600 too high? Would you bet the under on that one?
I probably would not bet the under on that. I think he'll get to the 600 plateau this year. I think he'll be fine. I think the Yankees will manage him. Plus, they do have another center fielder on the roster. They do have Trent Grisham on the roster, so they can DH Judge if they need to. And Stanton's already playing some games in the outfield or, you know, getting some exhibition games under his belt there. So you never know. He may be able to play some games in the DH, which will get those at-bats up.
Okay. All right. So maybe it is a fair bet that ATC has going. All right. Corey Seager. We know that Corey Seager misses time during the season, but he seems to come right back, and he plays at a very high level when he does. Question for him is, when is he due back, and will he come back at full strength?
Well, he had sports hernia surgery at the end of January, but the manager, Bruce Bochy, said this past week that he's optimistic that Seager will be ready for opening day. He's already swinging, he's fielding ground balls, he's playing catch, he's ramping up his activity, so there's still enough time for him to get back. Will he be 100% when he comes back? Physically, yes. Will he be 100% ready for baseball? I don't know, because usually some hitters do need a certain amount of at-bats in spring training to get going, so you may get the spring training version of Corey Seager to start the season, but he should be fine by mid-April.
Okay. So draft with confidence, pretty much. Projections have him at about 550 plate appearances, so that sounds very reasonable.
That's fine.
Yeah. Tommy Edman, we know he's counted on for some steals to lead off. Is that a good bet, or should we be cautious about Edman?
Well, his injury has nothing to do with his legs, and that's a good thing. He had right wrist surgery in October, but he's going to start the season on the IL and was shut down due to lingering pain in the surgically repaired right wrist. He's still doing some defensive drills. He's still throwing, but they don't want him to swing a bat. They're holding back on that right now, and they want him to be completely healthy when he comes back because he can be very effective. Last year, his batting average wasn't that great, but you don't get him for his batting average. You're getting him for those stolen bases and for all those positions that he can play. Will he be ready by mid-April? Maybe, probably the end of April, if I had to say. So I'd say maybe the third or fourth week in April, he'll probably be back.
Okay, let's talk about our hometown Met, Jeff McNeil. Now, I have a suspicion he was injured last year. He was okay, but not at the, league-leading batting average type. Do you think that injuries were the cause of it last year? Can he revert to form, and what is his latest injury?
Well, he was recommended or an option for him to have Tommy John surgery, and he didn't go for it. He went the rest and rehab route, and then he started giving a biceps injury early in spring training. He's already played again. He's already back in there. He's still a little bit of tenderness there, but he should be good to go for opening day. The question is if it flares up. I mean, Max Muncy had the same thing last year. He was recommended for surgery, didn't go for surgery, and ended up playing perfectly fine. So there is a ray of hope for Jeff McNeil that he'll live up to his expectations for this year.
I mean, are we buying him at his cost? He's not going that expensive anymore.
No, at his cost, if he doesn't play that well, you sit him on the bench for a little bit, and if he gets hurt, you can drop him. You're not spending that much money on him. The only thing is that he's eligible in different positions. That's one of his major values, especially with his batting average.
All right, let's talk about Texas third baseman Josh Jung. He has had injury history in the past. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, and can we expect him to play a full season this year?
Well, Josh Jung, the last year was a freak injury in the weight room, so I'm not really concerned about that at all. But he had a calf injury, and he had it in mid-February. The MRI was almost 10 days ago, showed improvement, so that's looking good. But calf injuries can linger. Just look at Josh Donaldson a couple years ago. His calf injury kept lingering and lingering and lingering, and it's just something hard to beat because if you use your legs, which baseball players obviously do, having your feet under you is very important, both for fielding your position, for batting, for running, for taking off when you have to, and that's start speed and everything like that. But Rangers manager Bruce Bochy said yesterday that Jung is expected to play in the final two exhibition games, March 25th and 26th, and if he's all good to go, he may be ready and get cleared to play opening day. The Rangers haven't said that yet, but if he gets through those two exhibition games okay, the Rangers may just go ahead with him.
Okay, that's good news there. As an aside here, I always hear that plantar fasciitis is like the worst thing to have because it just acts up. You'll miss time here, miss time there. Any players who have that, you just know that they're going to be out for extended periods of time. Who used to have that? Like Corey Dickerson used to have that, right?
Corey Dickerson, Albert Pujols had it also. It zapped his power 1 year. And the issue with that is that plantar fasciitis is an inflammation of the bottom of the foot. It's a fat pad that's inflamed. It's not a tendon. It's not a ligament, it's the fascia, which is the fat. And that can take a long time to heal. The problem with that is being able to run. Usually people with plantar fasciitis, when they get up in the morning, they can't put any pressure at all on their foot. And if you can't do that, it's a problem. During the course of the day, it gets better, but then it gets worse in the morning, and then they can't put any pressure. And that's when they start wearing a boot and protecting it to make it get better. But this is something that can come and go and come and go and last a whole season.
All right, let's talk about Ian Happ. What's going on with him?
He had a mild left hamstring strain. He DH'd yesterday, so barring any setbacks, he should be good to go. So if you're getting a discount for him, take it. He's worth it.
Yeah, I was going to buy him yesterday. One of the mistakes I made, I think, in Tout Wars is that I bought Anthony Santander. Now, I thought I got a good deal on him. I spent 10 bucks on him. But I saw Ian Happ had a better price, and I thought I maybe could have gotten a better bargain on him. I could have. He went for even less than that. But the thing is, in an auction, you don't know. You know, I didn't know that Ian Happ was going to go for a better bargain, so I just took what I can. Not a mistake, per se, but... you know, small regret. I do like Ian Happ for this year. Very good in OBP leagues as well. Vaughn Grissom, one of the prizes of the Chris Sale trade to Boston, slated to be second base. Of course, if you're drafting him, he is shortstop only right now, but should gain second base eligibility. Should have a decent average. Should have a good power-speed combo. What is his issue, and when can he get to playing regular games on the Red Sox?
Well, in the early part of spring training, he had a hamstring issue, and then he went and turned into a groin strain just because of the moving around that he did and everything like that. But the Red Sox manager Alex Cora said he's not going to be able to play opening day. They're saying mid-April, probably late April, which means Emmanuel Valdez and Pablo Lopez may get some more playing time at second base. So those guys are not even being drafted right now. And if you need someone who's playing every day, you know, grab one of those guys for now and grab Vaughn Grissom, because he'll come back mid-April, late April. You can have the handcuff on that.
All right, Gabriel Moreno, very high batting average for a catcher. What's he dealing with?
He had a back injury, and it was just said lower back tightness. But lower back tightness for a catcher is a little bit concerning, especially in spring training. I'm a little bit concerned about it. But he's young. He should get over it. He was supposed to be in the lineup on Sunday, but I checked the lineup box scores. I didn't see them. I didn't check today or not if he was in the lineup yet. But he should be okay. If not, Tucker Barnhart, the former Red, is available there, and he can back up and play for instead of Moreno.
Jose Abreu, he's getting old. He's already suffering from injury issues. What's going on?
He had right knee soreness to start the spring training, but he's already back in the lineup, and he homered today. So if you can get that value on him, which his value according to ATC, I believe, is very big, if you can get that value on him and you have another corner infield who's already starting the season on the IL, this is the guy to get. There's no reason why not. You know what you're going to get for the most part. His batting average is not going to be what it used to be, but he still gets some of that power.
Yeah, we own him in one league, so I have him projected for about a $9 player in an NFBC standard format, and we call it the Joey Votto nomination because Joey Votto, for the past couple years, has always projected well, but I didn't really want to draft him, but I certainly didn't want somebody to get him for a dollar, and if he's not brought up early enough in the draft, he will go for that. So we brought him up at a dollar. We figure if we win him at a dollar, great. Hoping he goes, well, let's say $5, so that he has a, you know, small-ish bargain. And the first one we did that, we won him. A dollar. I'll take a dollar, Jose Abreu. The second draft we did that, we put him up for a dollar, and he went for $5. So we executed the plan well. By the way, did you see that letter from Joey Votto today?
I did not. What was the letter?
Oh, Joey Votto wrote this very heartwarming letter after he made bad comments a couple years ago about who cares about playing for Canada, it doesn't matter, and he felt so sorry about it, and his mother sort of yelled at him about it and said, that's not how I raised you, you don't talk that way about your country, and he wrote a heartwarming letter about how sorry he was and apologizing to everybody and his mother. In a letter, just such a sincere fellow, Joey Votto, and a person who I think is a Hall of Famer and somebody that I would love to see around baseball in some capacity for years. Really a big fan, Joey.
And he has a personality to be a broadcaster. But going back to Jose Abreu for a second, in that league we drafted Jose Abreu, we have another guy who's injured, so he's actually been playing our first base for us. Josh Lowe is out. So, you know, we have a fill-in right away.
Not Josh Lowe. No, Nate Lowe.
Nate Lowe. I mix up all the Lowe's all the time. Nate Lowe. But Nate Lowe's out also. So, you know, you have that opportunity, if you have it, to get Jose Abreu real cheap. You know, he's going to play. The White Sox, they got no one else at first base. They're not going anywhere, and they're not going to trade Jose Abreu. So just, you know, I'm sorry, he's on the White Sox. He's on the Astros.
He's going to
play. He's going to play in the Astros. They're not going to sit him that much. He's in a great lineup. He's in a good, as opposed to the White Sox, which are a bad lineup. he's in a good lineup. So take advantage of his bargain and grab him when you can.
Speaking of Nate Lowe, somebody who I've drafted a ton of, ATC has him as the biggest corner infield bargain there is. What is Nate Lowe's story? Can we expect him back early on in April?
Well, Nate Lowe was diagnosed early March, I think the second week of March, with an oblique strain, a right oblique strain. He had some tenderness. MRI revealed the strain. It was a low-grade strain, so it will cost a couple of weeks at least. Usually a low to mid-grade strain can be anywhere between 3 to 6 weeks. And that's, you know, he's not really having a spring training either, so he's going to have to do some rehab time as well. So you're looking probably him missing most of April, maybe the beginning of May. That's probably when he'll be back. I mean, there's a bunch of people who can play first there, and I'm not really overly concerned with that. Also, is a better chance of Wyatt Langford making the roster because he's not going to be there.
Yeah, Wyatt Langford is sizzling in spring training. ADP projections have been shooting up on him also. So has the market. So it's harder to roster him these days. Those early drafters were rewarded, apparently. Let's go to the Yankees for a couple of players. Jason Dominguez rehabbing and Oswald Peraza. What's the story with some of those Yankees?
Well, Dominguez had Tommy John surgery last September. He's already throwing at 75 feet, which is good for him. He was going to begin hitting from both sides of the plate. He began hitting as of last week. They're expecting a midseason return for him, which I think is going to be great for the Yankees, because give him another option in the outfield, maybe give Judge a little bit of a break in center field, move the outfielders around a little bit. And Oswald Peraza was diagnosed with a subscapularis strain in his right shoulder. This is typically more of an injury that a pitcher would get, but he's going to be out for a while now. They're saying 6 to 8 weeks. So this opens the door for a nomad like Jaime Jones to make the roster. I know you don't know who he is, but he's on the Yankees roster. He's a very good possibility of getting the last infield, outfield type slot going there. I don't know how much you want to draft Peraza right now at this point, or if you're looking for upside. I can't see you drafting him in an NFBC league at this point. He should be available later on if you really want to take a stab at him, but I'd probably just stay away from him.
There's another Yankee who just got injured to make matters worse for them, DJ LeMahieu. Uh-oh, what's going on with DJ?
Okay, this is another Aaron Boone classic. DJ LeMay, who was hitting the foot, he said, oh, he'll be out for a couple of days. And then today they came out and said he's got a pretty significant bone bruise and he'll be out for maybe a couple of weeks. you can't trust anything that Aaron Boone says. So whatever he says, just ignore it. And you can't trust what Brian Cashman says either, because he seems to flip-flop also. So the Yankees are one of the organizations that you can't really trust. It used to be the Mets, but now I think it's the Yankees. They're looking at a couple places to fill in the void. I heard rumors of Josh Harrison coming to the team, and I've heard rumors of their former third baseman. Who's that guy who's on Detroit? Gio Urshela, yeah. That they're thinking about getting him because he did not make the Tigers roster either. So there's a possibility that one of those guys get to fill in. So you never know. You want a guy in the Yankees lineup, grab one of those waiver guys. Those guys are definitely going to be available, and you never know.
It's looking worse and worse for the Yankees. We'll get into their big pitcher prize in a bit, just a couple more. Josh Lowe on Tampa, ooh, one of the better players on that team. What's going on with him, and how long is he out?
He was also diagnosed with an oblique injury. He already missed the first half of March with a left hip injury, with left hip inflammation. So he's already back. There's questionable whether he's going to make opening day. My guess is it's going to be a six-week thing, so you may see him mid-April also. I mean, these muscle injuries early and to mid-spring training are just horrible, because you never know when the player's going to come back.
All right, what about Reds outfielder TJ Friedl? ATC always had great projections on him. And, you know, just a couple weeks ago, we thought there was a big logjam in Cincinnati for playing time, both in the infield and in the outfield. Noelvi Marte out on a suspension for half a season at least, and now Friedl, what's going on with him? Is he missing significant time? And we could also talk about who's going to replace him in the outfield.
Yeah, he is going to miss significant time. They already said he has a right wrist fracture. Sometimes wrist fractures require surgery. If they don't, he could be back in 4 to 6 weeks. If it needs more and needs surgery, he may be out 6 to 8 weeks. So the question is, they said they're going to reassess in 3 to 4 weeks. If it's healing the way it should, he will not need surgery. He'll just be in a cast for like 3 to 4 weeks and then take it off and then start up activities. But if it doesn't heal properly, he can be in a cast for up to 6 weeks and be up to 8 weeks, which means that Will Benson will get a lot of playing time. But he may platoon with Stuart Fairchild, which is what the Reds did a lot last year also. So if you want to get the better platoon, I think Will Benson is the better guy to get.
Yeah, and someone who hasn't been going that high in drafts, Jake Fraley. I've been drafting quite a lot of him. Roster Resource currently has him as the cleanup hitter, and a pretty clear playing time for him to be in there. Jake Fraley is solid right now.
Well, yeah, Jake Fraley is going to benefit the most because he's not going to be platooned at all now at this point. He's going to play him almost every day because I think the Reds, they had a plethora of outfielders and infielders, and that seems to be dwindling as the season comes closer.
Yeah, well, they might have known about Nuelve, which is why they probably signed Candelario. But obviously this just happened with Friedl. Unfortunate. These are good kids, and we want to see them play and succeed. Okay, so let's go on to starting pitchers, and you have to start the discussion with all the way at the beginning is Gerrit Cole. I mean, it's terrible in fantasy when you have the number two starter go down. You know, before you do it, you know, can you explain the difference? We hear all the time, he's got a partial tear, he's got a full tear. Anytime we hear elbow, we always think, Tommy John surgery. But sometimes they just say rest, sometimes they say partial, full. What is the story? Is it better that it's a partial tear? Is it would have been better if it's a full tear and they get the surgery instead of lingering? Like, what is the story with all that?
Well, it's very hard to say because a full tear usually requires surgery, no question asked. But a partial tear, it's up to the player. You can go either way. You can go rest and try a PRP injection, which is a plasma-rich platelet injection, and that helps take your own blood. It actually you take your blood, you spin it down, get out all the bad stuff, keep the good stuff, and re-inject it to the area where you have the injury, and hopefully it helps regenerate some of the tendon that's torn. So, well, does it help? It's shown to help a little bit, but a lot of times it doesn't help. I know Shohei Ohtani had a couple of those done before he ended up having Tommy John surgery, and a lot of people do also just to get it done. In the past, Alex Rodriguez had a PRP done for his hip, try to get back to play. He was never the same, but he was able to play. What level they were able to play at is different. Now, when you're a pitcher throwing the ball over 100 times, it's a little bit different when you're using your elbow over and over and over and over again, and it's very tough to come back from a PRP injection or from a partial tear right away. Now, there are some pitchers who have played with partial tears, and they've been perfectly fine. I mean, there was one pitcher. Can you name the one pitcher who won a Cy Young without a UCL in their elbow?
That's Dickey.
Ari Dickey. He didn't even have one, and he won. So it can be done, but it's just so much harder. Now, a partial tear means that it's not completely torn, but then if you can have an MRI that says partial tear and you go to 1, 2, 3, 4 different specialists, they'll keep looking at it. They'll say it's partial tear. They'll say it's completely torn. They'll say not a tear. You have different opinions. That's why he went to get a second and third and fourth opinion, because when you have that much money riding on one player, you want to be 100% certain what the diagnosis is, and you want to treat it 100% correctly.
Right. Okay, so what is the story with Gerrit Cole?
Well, they said that the Yankees, they said he's dealing with nerve inflammation in his right elbow and he won't throw for 3 to 4 weeks. That means that he's not going to throw a ball until at least the second week in April. Okay, they said he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, but if he's not throwing for 3 to 4 weeks, and then he starts to come back, and he has a setback and setback and setback, you never know. You don't know how many innings he's going to pitch this year. So, you know, there's other guys on the Yankees roster that can be the number 5 starter now. Everyone moves up a notch. Clayton Beter, I guess, can start. Luis Gil, he looked pretty good so far this spring. He may actually be the number 5 starter. There are guys out there, but nobody close to Gerrit Cole.
Is the replacement for him not on the roster yet? Are they going to sign Jordan Montgomery or even like a Michael Lorenzen?
That you have to ask Scott Boras, because until he gets those prices down, I don't think those players are signing anywhere. Now, they can wait until May. There's no reason why they wouldn't. I mean, would you sign for a little bit of a discount, a 1-year contract for Blake Snell if he's available? Jordan Montgomery probably wants a couple more years, but I think they wanted to see what happened to Cole first before they, you know, put their feet in the sand and say I want to sign already. They start telling Scott Boras they want to sign. I've heard rumors of a 2-year contract with an opt out after this year for a couple of those guys. Listen, the Yankees said they're all in this year. If they really were all in,
they traded
they'd
for
go
Soto.
One of those guys.
I mean,
yes,
they better.
Soto, and there's a 50-50 chance or even a 70-30 chance that he's going to end up on a different New York team next year.
Oh.
If that's the case, if that's well, that's what I mean. That's what all the rumors are saying. If you believe
yeah, that's
John
gonna
Heyman,
get somebody good. That's wishful thinking here.
Well, it's the unpopular. It's a out loud secret. Everyone knows that already. So it's nothing crazy to say. But if the Yankees are really all in this year, I don't see why they would not sign one of those guys at least for a 1 year deal. And actually, breaking news. I know we don't normally break news, but as I'm doing this, my son comes running in here and says, Blake Snell signs with the San Francisco Giants. So, you know, Justin Mason, I'm sorry about TJ Friedl, but now you got Blake Snell on your home team.
Well, there you go. Blake Snell is a San Francisco Giant, crossed off the list from coming to the Yankees. I noticed I didn't say Snell was going to go to the Yankees. That would look pretty stupid. We're 2 seconds later, you say he's not.
Yeah, well, you don't never know with breaking news, so.
Yeah, okay. ATC has Gerrit Cole projected for about 90 innings. Are you taking the now? But before I have you answer that question, what's the probability that Gerrit Cole's just not going to pitch this year? Is it over 50?
I'd say at this point it's 50-50. I think he's going to try to push himself more than the Yankees want him to, and he may hide stuff that's going on, you know, hide and play, try to play through the pain, because he's as they've called, he's a quote-unquote bulldog, and he will try to do that, especially if the Yankees are in playoff contention. I can see him pushing himself to come back. So I think he will pitch, but the over-under at 90 pitches, at 90 innings, I may actually take the under for that.
Yeah, I think so too. But even if he comes back, is he going to be Gerrit Cole? Is he going to be
himself? That's the whole thing. You expect him to pitch 8 innings every time he goes out there, 7 innings every time he goes out there.
If you're drafting, okay, let's say you're in a 23-round draft, at some point it's worth it to take the gamble, right? My 23rd round pick, it's worth to take the gamble of Gerrit Cole, because worst comes to worst, you find out in 3 weeks you drop him. If he's pitching, you have a shot at getting the number two pitcher in all of baseball. So I understand. It's not worth taking in the third round, fourth round, right? That's just too high risk. At what point is it worth taking the risk? And I'm a risk-averse person, so it's going to be lower. But where would you be comfortable taking him in a 23-round draft?
Well, I think it depends on your team construct. If you have two starting pitchers already, and he's going to be your number three, and you may get half of a full Gerrit Cole on your roster, I'd have him as your number three starter. You know, I go maybe 11th, 12th round if you already have two pitchers, and you know he's worth a risk. I think I can handle a risk of a non-healthy Gerrit Cole on your roster for that price. I think that's enough of a discount. But then again, we've been burnt in the past. We waited and we waited for Jacob DeGrom to come back, and we paid the discount, and the discount just didn't pan out.
You know, I would have said less than 10th. Of course, it depends if your league has injured list spots or not. If it does, then you can take a little bit bigger risk. If it does not, like the NFBC, I think it's lower. I would have said like 15 to 18 is my price point for Gerrit Cole, which probably means I won't get him.
But people are going to see them on the board there, and I don't think he's going to last that long.
You know what?
People, I'm just going to go. But the earliest I'd say I would take him is maybe the 11th or 12th round. I think that's probably the sweet spot for me at this point.
If you're playing in a contest that has an overall on the NFBC, for example, I can see him being taken higher because you're going for upside. Well, I'll get my Gerrit Cole share on the upside. If he hits, okay, I have a shot at the big prize of the overall. But if you're in a standalone league, the numbers go down because you don't need Gerrit Cole to win. If somebody happens to profit from him, okay, you don't need it as much.
But what this does also, it also bumps up everyone else's value below him. So everyone else becomes a little bit more expensive. You can't really see it right away, but it just makes pitching a little bit more expensive. Just like last year when Diaz went out, all the closers became a little bit more expensive because there was no quote unquote sure thing there.
Oh, changes the market a lot, obviously, and closers even more. We'll talk about closers later today, but that is true. All right, enough about Gerrit Cole. Let's talk about some other pitchers. Let's go to Wade Miley, not in the league of Gerrit Cole, but Wade Miley, always been a little favorite of mine, had a really good, sneaky good season last year. What's his story?
He's dealing with a shoulder issue. He just have shoulder soreness. Say that five times fast. And he should be. He threw a simulated game last week. He threw a 30 pitch bullpen session earlier, and he should be okay. He hasn't been ruled out for opening day, but he's a guy who's not really being drafted at all, and his ERA the last couple years have been really good. So I don't see why he's not being drafted in more leagues.
Well, you don't have to.
Should be, I think.
You don't have to draft him. He's a streamer. You can just pick him up as you need him.
But you can pick him in the 29th or 30th round and be able to throw him out also, especially if he makes the opening day roster.
Yeah. And during the season, you might want to throw him away if your roster is too big. He's the guy that doesn't have to be rostered, but he's very useful, though. And if you're in a mono league, he's excellent.
Yes.
Taj Bradley, high upside guy on Tampa. What's the story? How many innings are you going to get out of him this year?
Oh, boy. It's a combination of being a Rays pitcher and having an injury. I don't know. The last couple of years, Rays pitchers have not been that great with injuries and everything like that. He was shut down.
Is that fluky, by the way? Is that fluky that they've had it, or is there an epidemic on the team from how they train?
I guess it could be fluky, but I mean, they're picking a certain pitcher that makes them more. These are all, they're from their own, you know, their own drafting and everything like that. I think it's just a matter of the pitcher type and the pitcher build that they're taking and the way they're building up their pitchers. It may be a combination of both of those things. But I mean, to have it every year, the same thing happen over and over again to their pitchers, it's just, I don't know. It just feels weird. What do you think?
I really don't know the answer to that one. I like to think that there's mostly randomness, but I really couldn't tell you whether something about it. I'm sure there is a slight correlation, but I really have no way to measure how much that is.
Right, and he's got a pectoral injury. He's got a right pectoral strain. He's being shut down for at least 2 weeks, so he's not going to pitch at least throw until around opening day. So if that's the case, and then he still has to build him up again and get him going and hope for no, you know, setbacks, which is the word everyone hates and dreads to see on all the news media, is a setback this, setback that. He may not be ready until May. He may not be ready till mid-May. And is he worth it? I mean, if you want to roster Taj Bradley, you don't have to at this point. If you drop him now or if you don't draft him now, someone probably will, but they may get dropped early in the season. You may be able to get him off the waiver wire later.
Justin Verlander, who we know is starting the season slow. He's probably going to start in the IL, but we know how he recovers. He had actually a pretty nice sneaky season last year. In Tout Wars, in the mixed auction, he only went for $3. In the AL only, he only went for $3. Even in the head-to-head auction, he went for $5. But $3 in those leagues, that seems really, really cheap for someone who is going to almost assuredly, if he pitches, out-earn $3 in just a couple of outings. Does he seem okay to pitch? We're talking at least, you know, 100 innings in the year. And is this a buying opportunity?
I think it is a buying opportunity. I wouldn't be the one buying him because he is, you know, over 40 pitcher. And he is coming off an injury play last year as well. He's going to start the season on the IL. They already said that. And the Astros manager, Joe Espada, already said that he'll throw a light bullpen session. If that goes well, he'll go to advance to live batting practice. And then he'll leave multiple live sessions before pitching in games. So he's still like a week or two away from actually pitching in games. Given that, and that he has to build up and everything like that, he's probably not going to be ready till around the end of April, which is good news for the Mets. You mentioned about the innings. I believe Justin Verlander has a player option that if he pitches 140 innings, it automatically kicks in for next year, and the Mets are on the hook for it. So if he goes for under that, the Mets will not be on the hook for that, which is an interesting aspect.
That is interesting. I didn't know that fact. He did pitch 162 innings. For all the, he was injury-plagued, he threw 162 innings last year. Struck out 144 batters with a 1.13 whip and a 3.22 ERA. I mean, I'm projecting 130 innings, which is far less than a lot of other projection systems who are in the mid-150s. I mean, even if he pitches 100, this is opportunity for break-even, a little bit of a bargain. I kind of think that this is worth it. I don't think he's going to be out for the year. I think it's just going to be minimal innings, right?
Correct. That's going to be the issue. And you know what? 140 innings, if you get 140 innings out of Justin Verlander for $3, I mean, you know, that's on a quality team, you're going to get wins, and as long as it's the same Justin Verlander, it's a no-brainer. So I think this is a definite buying opportunity. You just have to have a little patience with him. That's all.
Friend of the podcast and our good buddy Frank Stampfl actually is the one that bought him in the mixed auction. And I sat behind him, observing at draft, and I look at him after, I'm like, $3 for Justin Verlander? What? That was really, really good pick, I thought. Yes. So there you go. All right, next pitcher. Let's go to the Mets. Kodai Senga. You know, the Mets, I can't remember, Ruvain, a season where we came in with, like, no expectations. Like, usually we come in, all right, it's going to be our year, and then disappointment. Even before the season started, right? Diaz, before the season started, it's going to be one of those years. Well, this year going into it, we've got no expectation other than we're going to go to see some games and hear the trumpets this year. But Kodai Senga was one bright spot last year, and that's already getting dim. Is this a guy that? What is his situation? Oh, he's staying away from him in drafts totally. What is his story?
Well, he's got a shoulder issue. And right now, he's not even starting a throwing program for another week or so. So based on that, he's going to come back early May, maybe end of May. They did some imaging. He's going to do some more imaging before they actually send him back and actually start the throwing program. So he's got a moderate posterior capsule strain of the right shoulder. That means he's got a strained shoulder, basically, because the posterior capsule is the back of the shoulder. And he's got a little bit of a strain there, which is not a sprain, so it's not a tear, but it's strained. So you have to be very careful with that, because anything, again, with shoulder and pitcher, and especially a pitcher coming over from a different country who wasn't used to the ball last year and now, you know, trying to work back up to it, you know, this is an issue that any foreign player, when they come in, they may have an issue like this either in the first year or second year, just because of the way the ball is, how tacky it is, and everything like that.
I have him at 100 innings for ATC. Over or under?
I think I'll take the over on that. I think he'll have maybe 110 innings. Not much more than that, but I'll take the over on that. And by the way, his replacement, I think right now, is going to be Jose Budo. And he was the guy who I picked up last year, and he was amazing at the end of last year. He pitched lights out, and he's doing really well in spring training. And again, he's a guy who's going for free. But just keep that name in mind, Jose Budo.
Other guys in the Mets, I mean, Tylor Megill is going pretty late. He seems like he's he had a great start to that other year a couple years ago. He could be back. Jose Quintana, I think he's also going pretty low in drafts. Even Sean Manaea has looked pretty decent. He'll get you some strikeouts. I think the Mets staff is undervalued. When I say undervalued, I mean the expectation is very low, but I still think that they are undervalued in drafts.
Yes.
All right, moving on. Let's go to Sonny Gray. Is he going to start the season on the IL? If not, it's going to be close. What's the story?
Right now, they're saying he's not going to start the season on the IL. He has a right hamstring strain, not a sprain, but a strain. And they already said, Cardinals manager Oliver Marmol already said that he's not an option for opening day, but may play in the first week of the season. So there's a possibility that he can avoid the IL completely. So we'll see how that works.
Okay. Gavin Williams, another one that could start in the season on the IL, might be a week or two. What is his story?
He's got a sore elbow. His MRI came back clean, which is good, so there's nothing going on, but they're being very careful. He's scheduled to resume a throwing program in the next couple of days. He is going to start on the IL, and our old friend Cookie Carrasco looks like an option there, so we'll see how that works.
Wow, Carlos Carrasco back there.
That's very possible that he'll pitch, yes.
Wow, all right, well, good for him. Kevin Gausman, high-level guy, I think we'll start the season on the IL, but this sounds similar to Zach Wheeler's story from a couple years ago. Everything seems all right with him, but, you know, they're being cautious and he'll take longer to ramp up, and you might get a couple of bad starts to start the season. Is this an example like him where just expect a couple of bad starts and then he'll be great the rest of the way, or are you more concerned?
Yes. No, I'm not really concerned about him. They're saying it's right shoulder fatigue, which means there's no damage in the shoulder, or at least they're not telling us there's any damage or any MRI or anything like that. So they're just taking it a little bit slow with him. And the manager actually said that it's okay if it means 30 starts as opposed to 32, we'll be pretty happy with that. That's the quote of the manager. So They're just being extra cautious with him. He's their stud. He's their workhorse, and they want him to be right when the season starts.
Yeah, I haven't seen price depression, though, on Gausman, so I would normally say it's a buying opportunity, but I think he's actually being priced almost the same way, like very little.
But that may be because of the Gerrit Cole issue, because even if there's a slight injury, he may just be bumped up that little bit that he may have lost, that's all.
That's a good point. Braxton Garrett, very high upside player for the Marlins. Marlins, who had so much pitching, suddenly seem well out of it. Well, throw on, besides Garrett, also Yuri Perez. Why don't you talk about those two? Oh, boy, Yuri Perez looks like he's completely out.
Yeah, well, let's start with Braxton Garrett. He has left shoulder soreness. That's what they're saying. He's starting the season on the IL. He's already ramping up a throwing program, and he's going to progress to live batters hopefully this coming weekend. And they're saying that he may actually join the rotation sometime mid-April. So that's a possibility. So that's a little upside.
And we bought him for $2 in the NFBC the other week, right?
Yes, which is perfectly fine because you get a player like this at $2. It's not such a big investment that you're going to say, you know what, I have to hold on to him. You don't necessarily have to hold on to him. As for Yuri Perez, something a little bit different. They took him out of his last start with discomfort, with a broken nail in his right middle finger, but then all of a sudden came out of nowhere. He's got an elbow issue as well. They're going to send him for some testing. The testing results haven't come back. They know he's going to miss the beginning of the regular season. So a combination of those two guys already being out, you're looking at maybe Ryan Chirinos and Ryan Weathers being in their rotation.
Max
Meyer
is going to come up. No, he's got to.
Well, they sent Myers down already. They sent Myers down already.
Yeah, but that was before all the injuries, and they might just put him down for a week and let him join the second time through the rotation.
But they also may have an innings limit on him because he's coming off of Tommy John surgery.
They will. They will. The innings limit. I can tell you the innings limit's going to be close to 100 for Max Meyer.
So why would you push him so early when it's going to be cold out? Let him come up a little like end of April or beginning of May while these other guys will fill in for now. That's probably going to be their plan.
True. But you'll see Max Meyer come up, assuming he stays healthy, at some point soon. I'd say May.
And another guy we didn't mention is Edward Cabrera. He has right shoulder impingement, and he's going to hopefully get back to throwing in the next couple of days. He's probably going to miss opening day. I mean, that's 60% of their starting rotation is already gone. This sounds a lot like the Mets last year, where they had their top three guys literally out before the season even started.
Yeah, and then you have AJ Puck, who's probably also going to have like 100 innings limit, and same thing with Trevor Rogers, who are you going to get anything good out of him?
Well, he's healthy. You could say that. They need healthy bodies. So whether you get anything good out of him or not, that's, I think, for the Marlins is a moot point. They need innings. They need an innings eater. So any innings they can get from him, they're probably going to push him.
By the way, my source for a lot of the Marlins stuff, to give credit, is Craig Mish, our buddy Craig Mish. So please, if you haven't followed him for Marlins beat reporter stuff,
yes,
please do.
He does a great job.
Yes, he does. He's been on the show as well, and we've been in fantasy leagues with him. Let's go to the Twins. Anthony Desclafani. Uh-oh, what's going on? And is it Louis Varland time?
Yes, it is Louis Varland time. That's why his ADP is skyrocketing already. Desclafani threw an inning and two-thirds last week, but now, all of a sudden, he's got some soreness in his right elbow. He's going for a second opinion, which means that they think something's going on. So, yes, Louis Varland looks like he's almost a lock to make it out of the out of spring training. So, Louis Varland looked good last year, but now if you add on more innings for him, I think he's he was a buying opportunity 2 weeks ago, but you don't want to overpay too much for him now.
Yeah. J.P. France going to the Astros. By the way, and I should also mention Jose Urquidy. I think he came out also of the game, and he could be out for a while.
Yes, Jose Urquidy. He's going also for another opinion to see what's going on with his pitching arm. So we'll see how that works. But J.P. France, he actually made his spring debut last week. He looked good. He struck out a couple over 2 1/3 innings against the Mets, so he actually looked pretty good. So he struck out 4, so he looked pretty good. He looked healthy. I think they're going to just ramp him up slowly because they need him in the rotation, especially if Verlander's going to be out for a bit.
I went to a doctor for injury, and I asked for a second opinion. He said that you're also ugly.
Yeah, well, that's more of a personal opinion than a medical opinion. Actually, no, wait, I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
Sorry. Yeah. I just had to get that joke in full of the opinion talk. All right, Dodgers. Emmett Sheehan looks like he'll start the season on the IL. Gavin Stone was announced, has made the opening day rotation, although I don't think he's pitching in I shouldn't say he's not pitching in Korea. He's not starting in Korea.
No, not starting, but he did pitch already in Korea, Gavin Stone did. But
against the Korean team.
Correct.
Yeah.
But Emmett Sheehan, he has just some shoulder soreness, so we'll see how that works out. He's already completed a bullpen session. He's going to start the season on the IL, throw a couple of bullpens, and hopefully he'll avoid an extended absence. But because him and Walker Buehler, who's starting the season on the IL, isn't on with the team, that's why Gavin Stone has that opening.
What is the story with Walker Buehler? What are you going to get out of him this year?
I think you may get more innings out of him than you will Gerrit Cole. I think that will probably be my sense of what's going on. Will he get more innings than Justin Verlander? I think it may be close to both, because remember, Buehler is coming off of Tommy John back in August of 2022. They're being very cautious with him because, again, the Dodgers are built for the World Series and not built for the regular season, so they want to be as safe with him as possible.
All right, let's talk relievers now. And as you mentioned before, the market for relievers is getting thinner. Prices are really starting to get pushed up now. In the mixed tout wars, Edwin Diaz went for $27. Now, I think that's just ridiculous, but that's the market, $27 in the only formats where we're talking about $25, $26. It's really, really crazy. So let's start with Devin Williams. On the Milwaukee Brewers, he had to see a back specialist who told him he was out for 3 months. That ain't good. First question is he coming back this year, or is this just minimum 3 months?
It's approximately 3 months, but I think it's going to be a minimum. He's got two stress fractures in his back. Now, other players have had this. They've been out for an extended period of time, meaning 3, 4, 5 months at a time. I mean, David Wright had the same issue a couple years ago, and he's not a pitcher, and he missed a big chunk of the season. I believe he missed about 3 months also, but two stress fractures, which makes it a little bit worse. I mean, the Brewers really weren't going anywhere anyway, but I mean, there are some options there. We mentioned him in the prior podcast, Joel Pampas. His ADP has gone up now because he looked very good when we saw him. I don't see why not. I mean, they haven't named a closer yet instead of Devin Williams, but I think he has to be the front runner.
I think so. Although they might split at first, there is future star Abner Uribe. There's also Trevor Megill, brother of Mets Tylor Megill. Right now, ATC projections, and by the way, still has Devin Williams at about 30 innings and 15 saves. I would take the under on that. Remember, ATC is not just me saying, "Oh, it's this," right? There is some manual input, but if projections are all still giving him credit for a certain amount, it's only so much that the algorithm is going to do. I'd probably take the under. But we have Pampas at 11 saves, Abner Uribe at 7, Trevor Megill at 6. So don't really know what the story is yet. I would say Pampas the front runner, but I can't tell you that it's really for sure.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a committee to start with and see who stands out. I think that's what it's going to be. Just like the Cubs had last year, it was a committee to start out, and then all of a sudden Alzolay took over. I think it'll be the same situation.
But also, if Pampas, they might continue to use him in high leverage, right? They might say, all right, we like him, so we're just going to use you where it's best and give the closer role to somebody else, right? They could do that, even if he is the best pitcher in the bullpen as possible.
That's true, but that also means that he has more chance for a win. So I that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world.
Johan Duran just had the news today. I think it's an oblique. It's not arm-related, so he should be able to get back to form quickly. Question is, what is the timetable? We're talking like around 5 to 6, 7 weeks. And it looks like Griffin Jacks is the obvious guy to fill in the meantime.
Yes, it's Griffin Jacks or Brock Stewart, one of those two. But it's a moderate right oblique strain, not a mild, but a moderate. A moderate is usually about 6 weeks, sometimes up to 8 weeks. The mild is usually 3 to 4. The severe is 8 to 12. Pitcher usually go by the 6 to 8, so I'd say exactly probably 7 weeks. But that's a month and a half you're looking without Johan Duran. And then when he gets back, is he going to be throwing 104 miles an hour with that oblique coming back? We'll see if his motion changes or anything like that. But it started by feeling just some cramps, and then all of a sudden he had an oblique strain. So
Yeah, Duran's projections went down when I posted projections today, but it could go a little bit lower as more projections respond to the news and we get a little bit more information. So just check that out on Duran and follow that. What about David Bednar? We know that he had a lat issue. Are we worried about him? The last episode, you were pretty worried about him. And going by pricing in leagues, people are not as worried. And then, of course, are we taking Aroldis Chapman, who's... Did you see that video, by the way?
Yes, and I tried to forget it also.
Oh, dear Lord.
He is an interesting person, but, you know, I guess all pitchers are, but Aroldis Chapman more so than others. But I am a little bit concerned with the lat tightness because... You know, we've seen pitchers miss months with a lat injury, especially what Noah Syndergaard missed missed a big chunk of time. So I'm a little bit concerned. I know they're saying they're poo pooing it. They're saying it's not that bad. He's supposed to throw a bullpen session later this week and see how that goes. And they're saying he still has time to ramp up for opening day, quote, but it will be close. I don't think he'll be ready by opening day. And do I have the stomach to roster Aroldis Chapman?
Well, the question though is like is buying that set, if you're buying David Bednar and you're gonna roster Aroldis Chapman, is that very expensive? I kind of think Chapman is still going pretty cheap, even though, and Bednar, you know, he took a little bit of a haircut on price. I kind of think that rostering the two might not be so expensive to do, so you can, you know, still get the upside of Bednar, and in emergency, you'd still roster Chapman. Is that the way to go? I think.
I mean, for other teams, having a duo, I'd have no problem, but this is the Pirates. The Pirates are not supposed to be that good. So if they're on a better team, like let's say you want to roster Jason Adam and Pete Fairbanks, even though Pete Fairbanks is not injured, but because he has a history of injury, I'd rather have that duo.
Adam is cheaper. Also.
Exactly.
That duo is, I have that duo in a couple places where I have both Fairbanks and Adam. Yeah, that is a cheaper duo, and they'll get you more saved than Bednar Chapman. So yes, I agree.
Yes.
I agree. Speaking of another save duo or so, Evan Phillips, the backup to him, should be Brustar Graterol. Graterol is starting with some minor injury stuff. I would have put the save share at like 80-20 between the two, I think.
Yes.
With the injury, it's probably going to stay that way or get pushed forward. What do you think?
Well, he didn't travel with the Dodgers to Korea, so he's not going to be active for those two games. He's only appeared in one spring training game so far this season. And the hope is that he will have enough time to get ready for the first game of the season stateside, which is going to be March 28th. It's very tight from the build-up. It is possible, but it wouldn't surprise me if he starts the season on the IL.
Okay, going to the White Sox, a much less interesting place, but you know, interesting to talk about. You've got John Brebbia, who might be returning. I think he's going to actually throw in an exhibition game the next couple of days. You got Jordan Leisure, Prelander Baroa, Stephen Wilson, and they just, after trading Dylan Cease, they moved Michael Kopech to the bullpen. That's got a signal that they might want him as a closer at some point. I mean, just logic for me tells me that he's going to start as, you know, in lower leverage, work his way up, and if it clicks, he'll take over as the closer by midseason. That's just what that, you know, that roster move tells me. Do you agree with that? And what is John Brebbia, who I think is going to get the bulk of the save share to start the year, is?
I actually don't know what the heck they're doing there because they're saying Garrett Crochet is going to be their opening day starter. I mean, he's started how many games in his career? I don't know what they're doing there. John Brebbia, I don't think I want anything to do with him. I don't know how many games the White Sox are actually even going to win this year. Prelander Baroa actually is injured also. He had I believe he injured his I think it was a forearm. There are a couple of things. I just stay away from that whole situation. I don't think anything good can come from that.
All right, a couple of closers possible closers to talk about. Matt Brash out in Seattle. Very high skilled stuff. Andres Munoz is the closer, but Matt Brash, beginning of this draft season, was thought of. He could steal some saves from Munoz. What is injury status, and can he overtake Munoz's some of his saves?
Well, he had medial right elbow inflammation. Now, the important thing is that it's medial, not lateral. But it's just inflammation, and that's it. He's already playing catch at 90 feet. They're hoping he's going to start throwing off the mound either the end of this week or next week. They're even thinking that maybe he'll get to some spring training games by the end of the spring training, but they still think that he's going to start on the 15-day IL. But he's still a guy that you may want to hold on to or pick up in early April as a possible guy who will possibly close toward the midseason. I don't think it's going to be that much of an issue. Again, these pitchers have lots of setbacks. You never know what's going to happen, but he's a guy to keep your eye on.
And similar situation a little bit, Robert Stevenson in L.A. Carlos Estevez is the closer. Robert Stevenson, who had a great year last year with Tampa, they signed him. What is his story, and can he steal some saves?
Well, I think he will. Also, same deal as Matt Brash. I think midseason is probably best. He's dealing with right shoulder discomfort. And manager Ron Washington already said he probably will not be ready opening day. So he's same deal. I think he's something to think about and someone to stash in deeper leagues if you have the bench space for it. But I think he's going to start the season and may miss like a couple of weeks to start the season.
Yeah, Ron Washington, he just doesn't strike me as the analytics guy. I mean, no offense to him. He just seems like the old school baseball guy. Let's go with the closer. Like I can see him just sticking with assuming Estevez performs reasonably well. I can just see him sticking with that the whole season, right?
I agree, and I also listen to him more than I listen to Aaron Boone when it comes to injury stuff because he's more straight. I'm being serious. He's more straightforward than someone who's just talking around a bush.
Yeah. And Kenley Jansen, what's he dealing with?
Well, he had a right lat issue as well. He already pitched in one game. No setbacks so far. He didn't pitch that well, but he's just getting his work in, which is perfectly fine. He said that he needs a total of 5 outings and to be good to start the season. You know what? He's got 1 down. He's got 4 to go. He's got plenty of time to do it, so I think he'll be fine.
Okay, and a couple of quick updates. We've got some injury stashes. We're talking Jacob deGrom. Can't believe we're talking about him. Max Scherzer. Shane Baz, John Means, Kyle Bradish, and Robbie Ray. A couple quick points about them?
Yeah, quickly. All these guys you can probably look for midseason. DeGrom started a throwing program already, so post-All-Star break is probably for him. Scherzer had back surgery mid-December. He's cleared for baseball activities. He still has a mid-June return date, so he may actually come before the All-Star break. Robbie Ray had Tommy John last May. He already threw a bullpen session last week. He's probably a post All-Star break return as well. Shane Baz also coming back from Tommy John. He tweaked an oblique, so his return is going to be a little bit farther back. He was close to being cleared, and then he had the oblique issue. So you don't know when he's going to start. Probably midseason as well. You can also throw in John Means. He already threw a bullpen session, and the Orioles are saying that he should be ready by the end of April. So if you can get Means at a discount, he's a guy you could definitely grab. And another guy you could think about grabbing is Carl Bradish, because so far he has a partial UCL tear, but he's been throwing already. He had a full all fastballs bullpen session. It went perfectly fine. He's had no setbacks so far. So, yes, you can pitch with a partial UCL tear. Let's see how long it'll last for, though.
If you had to rank these, Ruvane, in terms of, you know, okay, they're all available. They're all in my reserve rounds. Let's take a shot, one of these upside guys. How would you rank all those guys that we just mentioned? DeGrom, Scherzer, Baz, John Means, Kyle Bradish, Robbie Ray. How'd you rank them?
I think I would go
because obviously, like John Means probably is gonna have the least amount of setbacks, closer to returning,
correct,
but doesn't have the upside of, you know, Jacob deGrom, obviously.
But you don't know where you're getting from Jacob deGrom. This is the second Tommy John, so it's a complete unknown. Are you gonna get the deGrom who throws 100 miles an hour after a second Tommy John? That's hard to see.
Understood.
And Max Scherzer last year wasn't, to be honest, we watched him as a Met. He wasn't really that good when he was pitching. He wasn't a top rotation guy. Robbie Ray, when he went on the IL, he wasn't at his peak either. So, you know, him coming back, the pitching situation there is actually a little bit better. I like the park he's pitching in. Shane Baz, he already had one setback. Let's say he doesn't have another setback. I think the two guys who I like the best are going to be John Means and Kyle Bradish. I think in that order. I think those are the two guys to watch for. And I think you get the most value out of Means.
And actually, I think we've taken stabs at each of them in different leagues.
Yes, so, just to be in the safe zone. You never know. You never know. You never
reserve
know.
Reserve rounds, or ticket. Actually means was a dollar at the end of a draft, and you know that's fine.
Yes, 100%. Take that stab. There's nothing. You're not going to lose any of that. If anything, you drop them. That's all.
Well, we've covered quite a lot. Is there anything else or anyone else we've missed? Obviously, if you guys are listening to this and you have a question, just reach out to Ruvane. He's at MLB Injury Guru on Twitter. Anything else that we missed, Ruvane? We covered so much.
I think those are the main fantasy relevant ones. There are a lot of other ones that are very minor. I'm not going to go into them, but if a player gets injured between now and opening day, it's very hard for them to get back. If there is some kind of oblique or a lat or something like that, it's going to be very hard for them to get back opening day. So just keep an ear out for the types of injuries that are coming up soon.
All right. So what do you got going on, Ruvane?
Well, you can catch me, like you mentioned, at MLB Injury Guru on Twitter. I'm tweeting out all these updates. My article for RotoBaller will start when the season starts. It's once a week, and it'll hopefully help you with your FAB reports, hopefully get you the guys that you want. And I think we are going to be facing each other in a league coming up. Aren't we drafting against each other in GDD next week?
Yeah, it'll be me teaming up this time with Derek Carty. And we look to avenge a really lousy showing last year. We got suckered with so many injuries. And you did well. You finished, what, second or third?
Yeah, I finished in third. I was in second the whole year. And then the great trade by Cozzolino, and he just overtook me the last couple of weeks of the season for second. But I was in second place. I was in second place the whole year, and I ended up in third. So hopefully I'll be able to continue that, and hopefully it'll work out.
We'll get that. You know me, I'm Ariel Cohen. You can find me on Twitter at ATCNY. If you want to follow what's going on with the ATC projections, there's a separate feed for that at ATC Projections. Real easy to remember. You can find my written work over at Fangraphs, over at RotoBaller. The ATC projections are up on a bunch of sites, including those two, CBS Sportsline, and as well as RotoWire this year. So check them out. Great episode, Ruvane. This is obviously, you know, your territory here, so mostly you doing the job here. And hope you all enjoyed it and got a lot of great information. We'll have a couple more episodes before opening day. We will have a more strategy episode next, and we should be doing a bold predictions episode and a prediction award episode as well. Those are always fun. So thanks so much for everyone listening through our draft season. Hopefully you've been prepped well. And reach out to us if you've got any questions. All right, once again, I'm Ariel Cohen. There's Ruvane Guy. Thank you so much for listening to the show, to the Beat the Shift podcast, presented by Fangraphs. And we'll see you next time on Beat the Shift.
Thanks for listening to the Beat the Shift podcast presented by Fangraphs. Follow us on Twitter at beat_shift_pod.